Yes, quick.
In full effect.
Quick and tasteless plug for our next live gig, Tuesday of next week, the 6th of June at Giant Dwarf. Our guests are the wonderful Dee Madigan and Oz Faruqi. And if you want $5 off, all you need to do is enter the password on the website, giantdwarf.com.au. That password is COVFEFE, because why not? COVFEFE. We don't know what it means, but you can get $5 off with that.
We're about four, at the time of recording, we're about 4 hours into the COVFEFE era. And yes. I feel like life's never going to be the same.
It's extraordinary.
I think we have seen a fundamental change in the way that language works and the way that politics works. Basically, I wouldn't be surprised if we wake up tomorrow morning and gravity's backwards.
Anything could happen.
That kind of change.
Which is a perfect cue to bring in Alice Workman of BuzzFeed's Canberra Bureau and also of the podcast Is It On? The Fundamental Question in Australian Politics. Hi, Alice.
Hello. I've been locked in budget estimates all day, so I've missed this COVFEFE drama. But I thought, is it coffee? Is that
it's
what
cov-
it is?
Like no, a, no. It's Donald like Trump.
But was he trying to say coffee?
It's coverage. Press coverage. Media coverage.
We think it's coverage.
Oh, it's coverage.
But,
but it's also mid-sentence. Even if it is coverage, it is still like it's not a complete sentence.
The tweet
itself.
Read, despite the constant negative press COVFEFE, and look, it could be the case that he's suddenly died mid-tweet, and it would be, what a way to go, but mid-angry and press tweet. So we may discover that.
I feel like we'd know if he died.
Well, you'd think so. But
Weekend at Donald's?
They may be trying to reanimate the corpse. He may have died months ago. Who knows? But it's an unusual thing. It's been up for 4 hours. I haven't yet seen him. I'm going to keep an eye on Twitter during our chat just to see if there's any update. But essentially, Twitter has absolutely lost it today, possibly like never before. I mean, this is a particularly insane moment. It is lovely. It is delightful.
And it's look, this is possibly the first time that Twitter has ever brought people together, and I'm very excited to
what
be witnessing this moment.
It's one of the best days on Twitter that I can remember. I think it's amazing.
I think that Twitter came together a little bit last night and helped the government overturn their poor decision to defund Healthy Harold.
Oh, Healthy Harold
really
the giraffe.
Rallied behind that.
Yeah, that was what were they doing?
I wrote a column on this very matter and on how clearly the way forward for any NGO or department that's looking at a funding cut, they just need to get an anthropomorphic animal to be their spokes creature, and boom, Twitter will leap behind them.
Drugs couldn't kill Healthy Harold
today. But yeah,
Burma nearly did. Yeah, sorry, as Labor described him today, the people's giraffe really he is.
They called him Harold, the giraffe, which I thought was very funny.
If only Harold Holt had had the same degree of injury. Yeah, I shouldn't have gone there. I will. Look, at least one Harold was saved.
We have an American, our boss, the founder of BuzzFeed, Jonah Peretti's, in Australia at the moment, and we had to explain to him who Harold Holt was, and he was completely like thrown by the fact we had a prime minister that just disappeared in the ocean one day. He was, because it is remarkably ridiculous. But
on the same day as COVFEFE, though, because who knows that Trump may be in any dimension at this point. He may have struck some kind of deal with the orb. The orb may have summoned him from beyond the realms. I don't know. But now the best thing about Harold Holt, every time you mention Harold Holt, you have to point out there is a swimming centre named after him in Melbourne. I mean, that is just surreal.
And there's also one named after Ian Thorpe. So has he disappeared or is he alive? So many questions.
As far as I know,
he is the people's Harold Holt. The thing that I love about the Harold Holt memorials. Is it memorial baths or memorial swimming? It is.
I think it's baths, which is funny and still. It's probably swimming pool.
See, I always assumed that it was one of those things where, like, the decision had been made before and, you know, it was kind of like, well, it seems in poor taste now, but, you know, obviously we didn't know. Nope, happened years later. It's
look,
amazing.
There's no way. You wouldn't name something after a sitting prime minister. Like, you wouldn't have the Malcolm Turnbull, you know, harbourside jetty or something while he's in office.
Oh, he'd be crucified.
That'd be too
crucified
weird.
Crucified in the media. Yeah.
Holt loved to swim. It was his undoing, but he still loved it. Perhaps a little too hard. All right.
Like
now,
Trump, he died doing what he loved.
Yes. We just don't know. It's about 20 minutes past six on Wednesday night at the time of recording, and really we're waiting to see if Trump is still with us. Was he pulled in the Situation Room? Did he die? Did he have a massive embolism midway through getting angry with the media? Mm-hmm. It's really is how he would want to go. Anyway, let's head to Canberra. The first question for our panel is the polls, because this is Australia and that's what we care most about. But the polls aren't moving. Malcolm Turnbull has launched the great reinvention that certainly renowned commentators APS and Dom said he should do. He's moved to the centre. The budget was a big reboot for him. Malcolm 2.0 or 3.0 or whatever it is. But
9.6.
Complete stagnation in the polls. Could this mean that the Australian people have simply stopped listening to Malcolm Turnbull, whatever he says, or is something else going on? What do you think, Alice?
Oh, I think they stopped listening probably after, like, the first day of the election campaign. Which is a year ago, really. The election was a year ago.
The backyard, was it the six-month-old who owned the house?
The baby that bought his first investment property at the age of 6 months. But I'm in the unfortunate circumstance at the moment of where Facebook gives you the a year ago today, this is what you were doing, and it's constant reminders of where I was on some bus or some plane in Whoop Whoop somewhere.
I was worried about that poor 6-month-old because you know if the reports of a downturn in the property market are true, she could yet become Australia's youngest bankrupt.
Oh, I don't think so. From memory, where they bought the house in kind of the outer metro area of Sydney, so I'm pretty sure that they'll be fine. It's an up and comer.
Well, there we go.
But the renovation attempt on the Turnbull brand. I mean, this is weird because this is the Malcolm Turnbull that those of us who thought it might be good having him as Prime Minister were hoping for, but people seem utterly uninterested. I mean, where does he go from here? Is he toast, Andrew, or is there still plenty of time to go? It's pretty early to call the next election, I suppose, in midway through 2017. The 2019 election's a little bit unclear, perhaps.
No, I've got a theory about when they're going to call the election, but let you guys, Andrew, you go first and then come. I'll give you my theory.
Hook them to keep listening, Alice. That's how I like it.
It's old radio talking. Well, I mean, as we call it in the business.
Well, we know that the government have been told you need to, you know, everybody needs to hold tight. We need to sell the budget. We need to sell the budget. We need to sell the budget. And that seems to be, like, uncharacteristically, everybody seems to be keeping sort of on message with that. Although, what was the deadline that Julie Bishop set? Was it 3 months? I mean, that's going to be, you know, I feel like Turnbull's habit of setting deadlines for things, like, looks horribly, like, blowing up in his face, because I feel like Tony Abbott in particular is really, really sitting on his hands at the moment. I would love to be saying more than he is, but he's just sort of, you know, making snide comments about not applauding adequately for the budget in Parliament. So I don't know. Like I feel like if things don't move pretty strongly pretty soon, then the backlash is going to be swift and terrible.
We tried it your way, Malcolm, and nothing happened. I don't know. What's your theory?
I want to hear Alice's theory.
Alice, yeah, I'm jonesing for the theory.
Okay, well, the election window, so the window in which they can call the next federal election is between August next year and May.
Is this so as to have a half Senate at the same time as per the usual?
Yeah.
No, that's just the usual. That's the usual convention. Yeah. 3 years. That's the 3-year window. So, yeah. But the thing to remember is that states are on fixed terms. So there's a whole bunch of state elections coming up that are going to be really close. So Queensland have to go. They'll go before anyone else. Anastasia Palaszczuk has kind of said publicly the start of next year, but I've been told by people that are running Labor campaigns, they're preparing for October. So we could see for this October. So
they
Queensland
love a stupidly short term, don't they, in Queensland?
This will be the last one that they get to pick and they'll go to fixed after this.
Yeah,
so it's kind of an interesting what they decide to do there. But there are a whole bunch of other elections. So New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia and Tasmania all have state elections coming up within the same window of when the federal election should be called. So the federal government have a really interesting decision to make about when whether to go early or to go late. Now, and there's so many things to factor in, not only polling, but also money and manpower. So the same people fly around the country to do these elections, whether it's state or federal. And the amount of money in the pool, and we know that Malcolm likes to throw in a few of his own million to help out the election
campaign.
As
you do.
But with the Victorian and the New South Wales elections going to be very, very close, and, you know, the closer an election is, the more money you're trying to fundraise right up until election day. So it's kind of stupid to go after Victoria and New South Wales where a lot of money is going to be thrown into them and,
yeah,
and
so
then
New
have to
South
do a
Wales
federal election and run
March,
out.
March 2019,
yeah.
I want to say. So,
and,
yeah, because Mark Baird left exactly 2 years through.
Yeah, so November is when Victoria is meant to be having their
of
election
next
as well.
Year?
Of next year. So in the yeah, so in this window. So I have a theory that they would go early and they might go in August. So that's only just a year away. And you've got to remember they'll have to do a cabinet reshuffle before. So Brandis will jet off to the UK, and that looks unlikely to happen before the end of the year.
Is he really still going to get that? I mean, he's certainly been very quiet recently. By his dad.
Well, I mean, Crikey, he's been predicting that he's going to be given Wellington over no, Saturday.
Well, he's going to be given something, and the
that
trick
seems
with
more
Brandis
plausible
is
to
he's
me.
Very, very careful with the way that he answers these questions, and he has always said if anything were to be offered to me, it would not be offered until I leave Parliament. So they'd strike the deal, he'd leave, and then they'd announce it, obviously. But, I mean, that's definitely on the cards, and that would spark a reshuffle. And there's kind of rumours that they're going to knock a National out of Cabinet and reduce the size of Cabinet as well. Julie Bishop has been rumoured to wanting to move portfolios too. Some people have been saying that this is going to be her last. She won't run again at the next election if there isn't another leadership spill.
Yeah,
so
right.
the mail on Julie is that she wants to be promoted, but unless there's a leadership spill and she becomes the next prime minister, which is highly unlikely, she might leave at the next election and take a higher paying job overseas.
Yeah, and look, she gets choice of portfolios, doesn't she? When there's a reshuffle as the deputy, she gets the pick of the board, if I recall.
Yeah, well, rumour is that she wants communications, which I think is quite an interesting move.
That's bizarre.
But, yeah, so the rumour is that Christian Porter would take social services and then someone would get the bump up to take his job. And then, so there might be some minor movements around. Barnaby is rumoured to want to leave agriculture and take infrastructure, and then they'd fold agriculture into someone else's portfolio, and that's how they'd get rid of one Nat.
Yeah, right.
He's an ex-treasurer from Western Australia. So there's always kind of been these rumours that maybe if Scott Morrison didn't live up to expectations, that Porter could easily step into treasurer because he's
won't
done it.
Now.
He's done.
Yeah.
Morrison's going fine. So
this is a good year actually by the standards of his early time as treasurer. How interesting. So this reshuffle, look, you certainly think Brandis will be out at some point, but if the polls continue to be dreadful for Malcolm Turnbull, surely he's not going to be super keen to go to an election. I mean, he won't want to cut short his time as PM. It's be an interesting calculation, won't it? How weird that even a year in we're already having this conversation.
Oh, I mean, 3 years is
not even a year
short. But you've got to look at other different types of polling. So Bill Shorten is immensely unpopular and unrecognisable still, even though he's been a leader of the opposition longer than Malcolm's been.
Really, people can't
Prime
pick
Minister.
Him out of a lineup, Bill Shorten.
Yeah, yeah. Tanya Plibersek's actually the preferred Labor leader, and then it's Albo. There's different ways you can interpret the polls and how they would factor that into running a campaign. There doesn't appear to be any real momentum to get rid of Malcolm Turnbull as Prime Minister at the moment.
It's failed so spectacularly. He's kind of got insurance, given that that's never worked.
Yeah, I mean, the Labor Party are under the impression, I mean, you know, there's
they
there's
think
all these...
Rudd worked, didn't they, the second, yeah.
Oh, well,
saved,
they think a lot of
saved
things,
the furniture.
But they are under the impression that they think that they might just sneak in, and there's a few outer ministry and ministers that are kind of backgrounding people saying, oh, we're all talking amongst ourselves whether we'll stay on or what we'll do if we lose government next. So no one really knows what's going to happen. The polls are so unconstructive that it's hard to predict. But I am guessing that they might go to the polls at the end of next year.
So is there any reason to think, though, that the current fairly locked-in margin of Labor having a 4 to 6 point lead, do you think that's a soft lead? Because, I mean, it's been pretty resilient given the budget and everything. But or is it that when we start looking at leaders again, Bill Shorten might, given his unpopularity, that might actually affect the two-party preferred vote
leaders? Yeah, I think polling in Australia is pretty accurate. Like it's not like what happened in the US or what happened with Brexit. Our polling is a lot more accurate. And so I think that, you know, the two-party preferred polling is important and it will factor in, but things change once election policies are announced.
Indeed.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, when we get, you know, as soon as an election is kind of on the cards, people start, you know, making pretty hard and fast decisions about who they're going to vote for. And when you've got things like, for example, the apparent slow car crash or increasingly fast car crash that is One Nation at the moment, you'd have to imagine that there would be, you know, the people who might be swaying toward it now, unless things are arrested pretty dramatically. And when I say things are arrested, I mean things are stopped, not the James Ashby's actually arrested, still a strong possibility.
When you say car crash, I mean, I got to say I would have thought plane, but anyway.
Plane.
Very small plane.
But you've also got to factor in you've also got to factor in what the state results will be or what the state pollings are, because the common voter doesn't differentiate between state and federal, I think. And if they're unhappy with Gladys Berejiklian or if they're unhappy with Dan Andrews, then that will factor into any federal decision that gets made as well.
Interesting. Now, this is going to sound entirely crazy given the polls, and I think it probably is, but to me that budget looked strangely like an election budget.
Yeah.
It was a bizarre thing to do. The first term budgets we know from 2014, not that it worked well, but that's supposed to be the tough budget where you set yourself up and maybe get a little bit of fat to hand out later in the term.
Traditionally, in terms of a three-year budget cycle, the first budget out of an election is meant to be the budget that rewards the people that voted for you. The middle budget is the tough budget, and then the third budget is the election spending budget. But the Liberals have abandoned that philosophy, and you can see that reflected in how people respond to their budget.
Yeah, this is the budget that tried to as we said before, Andrew, tried to plug a lot of the holes in terms of policy perception, tried to rebrand the whole party. So it doesn't seem to be working in terms of the two-party preferred, but maybe Turnbull at some point, given how unworkable this particular parliament is, maybe he will decide to be crazy brave again and go for it.
Well, I believe it was BuzzFeed who calculated what the most shared stories after the budget were, and they were far and away the negative stories about drug testing Centrelink recipients.
Yeah.
They were all stories about welfare crackdowns.
Yeah. So, I mean, for all of I think this is possibly one of the reasons why we're not seeing any movement. Not that there's not been cut through on the budget, but that there has been, and it's been almost entirely this one.
Yeah, right.
This one subject, which has got a lot of support in a very, very small sort of corner of the electorate, and very little support generally. So because when you look at everything else, I mean, you know, as we've talked about before, pretty much everything else is, you know, like people like you spending more on schools, people like you spending more on healthcare, people like, you know, nice sort of value statements about the importance of safety nets. And yet the thing that cut through was like, oh, okay, you know, the most Abbottian element of this budget is the thing that everybody focused on.
Yeah, it's so funny because the polling indicates that it has a kind of general majority support. The concept has majority support, but it also has extreme uneasiness. So people support it in principle, but also feeling really uncomfortable by the idea.
Yeah, there's a civil liberties issue, isn't there?
It's quite an interesting, and also generally the lack of detail and the profiling element of it too. And then today in estimates, they said that if you test positive, you have to bear some of the costs of the tests and that, because they keep saying that it's not about taking money away, it's about increasing employability, which is ironic given the jobs don't exist. But you know, that it now we're learning these tiny little things about it, like you'll have to bear the cost of the test, which might not necessarily be cheap. So
it feels very draconian, doesn't it? If you fail the test, we'll bill you for it.
Isn't that the Chinese execution model? The
yes,
build a family for the bullet.
That's amazing. That I'm not entirely sure it's true, but anyway, so that's things moving around. But yeah, the government certainly hasn't really got much in the way of clear air to do these things.
Yeah, but in terms of being like an election budget, the one thing that it was missing was any kind of average voter feeling there was money in their pocket, especially with the Medicare levy and the NDIS stuff. Like, I think that really impacts lower socioeconomic people more than it does upper, obviously. But I think, you know,
well, that's
Labor's
entire case.
Well, yeah. But I think that, like, with a traditional election budget, you want someone, if it's small business owners or whoever, to feel like they're getting money in their pocket, and there wasn't a really strong selling point of that.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't like Tony Abbott's have some cash to buy new gear for you.
Tony's trading cost $3,000. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah.
And I've stocked up on so many of those, and I am waiting for the toaster lead recovery to kick in.
I'm sure Tony's traders will come and say
toaster's big, toaster's
soon.
Huge.
Toast?
Well, as long as you've got some avocado to smash on it, obviously.
Oh, man.
Yeah, great.
You just—that's all millennials eat. If the Murdoch press is any guide.
All right, now let's look at One Nation a little bit more, because this has been fascinating. I mean, we're doing a daily comedy show at the moment, and One Nation, like just about every day, they're almost at Trump levels of multiple fascinating, weird stories going on, and I mean, Pauline Hanson
and
estimates.
And this is post Rod Cullerton too. I mean, like,
yes,
like it's so odd. You know,
they've thrown out their main comedy arsenal has been stripped from them, and they're still doing sterling work.
Normally, when when John Cleese left Python, that series was notably worse than the previous three of Flying Circus. And I feel like when you've left your prize clown, this is the time that you expect the circus to go downhill, but they have really, really pulled something out.
It's literally amazing. Is a flying circus that One Nation is operating at the moment. James Ashby, the man who can do everything, whether it's printing core flutes at potentially suspicious prices or flying the plane that arrived no one knows how. Alice, what's this been like up close?
Well, you'll be happy to know that Rodney Carlton is still in the building.
Still? What? So. How?
Is pretend lanyard?
No, he does love wearing a lanyard, that is sure. He has he doesn't have a politician's pass anymore, but he's got a sponsored pass. So some politicians have sponsored him to let him.
Surely the brother-in-law.
I know one Labor politician who sponsored him. I'm not sure who the other. I think you need two. So for comedy reasons,
politician,
he's still in the building.
Is that a politician about to fly to the UK for a week to help with their campaign?
No comment.
All right. By the way, Sam Dastyari is doing a live podcast later in the year for his book launch. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway.
Wow. That you will have to beep the crap out of that one.
That's going to be quite something. So, yes, he's a complete live wire, Sam Dastyari. Anyway, so I can't get a sense of it. There's so much weirdness going on. And then in the past 24 hours, the threat to block everything unless the ABC is immediately stripped of funding, which was then immediately reversed. But who's actually running the show?
Well, I mean, gosh, who knows really? But Peter Georgiou, who was the senator who took Rod Carlton's WA seat, also came out last week and said that he didn't agree with the party's policy to ban Muslim immigration, which is pretty much what Pauline launched this federal campaign on. And then they also got a lot of flack 2 weeks ago when they voted against. And the vote was a draw, and in the Senate, a draw is a negative result. So the vote so if they had voted in favour, it would have passed. They voted against quicker access for people who are terminally ill to get medicinal cannabis. So these are people that are about to die and could live longer if they could eat, which they can't because they can't keep food down, and medicinal cannabis would help them in that regard. So people who are going to die very soon and medicinal cannabis could, you know, just extend their life and give them a bit of comfort in the last dying stages. They voted against that bill, which is pretty much the cornerstone of how they flipped candidates over in Queensland, and the leader of One Nation in Queensland. That was the reason that he said that he was leaving the LNP, because they weren't fast-tracking medicinal cannabis. So
goodness knows, One Nation's voters surely can't imagine that a backflip or anything is unpredictable. I mean, the entire party is a backflip, basically. But
Well, the first polling that we've gotten the most recent polling we've gotten out of Queensland, which is where they are the strongest, their vote over the last 4 months has dropped from 23% to 16%. So, I mean, that's, you know, who knows what will happen between now and the next Queensland election. Maybe some more of their candidates will have been found to be doing some outrageous things, which I feel like there's one every other week. But
weren't they always going to do this, though? I mean, when you bring in a maverick outsider party, as with our dear friend Clive Palmer, surely the reality of these people is always far, far, like, you know, they always let you down almost immediately. Donald Trump, for instance, it doesn't work. I mean, I can't. I know people were talking about them potentially growing and becoming the third force in Australian politics. I thought those people were remarkably naive about just how terrible Pauline is at just about everything. I mean, when seeing her in Estimates, where they were gently trying to explain to her how an abattoir worked, and she kept asking whether the cows were alive when they were slaughtered, and it was, you know, you couldn't hear that audio and think, here's a person I trust to do anything around any sharp objects, let alone
be in the Senate. You look at the way that this is all kind of playing out, and it's basically 2001 all over again. And it's, you know, where we have sort of Ashby in the Oldfield role, essentially, where you have...
Didn't that work? Probably not all aspects of their relationship, but anyway, yeah.
Well, no, perhaps not. But that... Certainly in terms of having a key advisor who just becomes a remarkable open liability. And like the thing that I really, really want to get an answer on in terms of Ashby's insistence that the claims of, you know, that he was suggesting ways that they could use the upcoming election as a way of rorting money out of the Electoral Commission was what is the context in which what's the bit that's missing that makes this all perfectly reasonable?
Well, they claim it's the rest of the meeting where they ruled it out completely. But I mean, I think any prospect of suggesting illegal activity is they have been referred to the AEC, and the AEC said that the first leak take about charging candidates and then kind of defrauding the system, that's not going to be investigated. But the plain stuff definitely is going to be investigated. And the leak tape this week, which was her quoting an Australian article about it, is going to play into it, I think.
Are you suggesting that there is such a thing as a bad idea? Because when that if that's the basis on which we brainstorm, it's going to block a lot of really interesting and creative ideas. I'm just saying, you just that negativity. If I'm having to think about whether something's legal before I suggest it, I'm not going to say all kinds of racketeering style things. Anyway,
I think the difficulty with that first tape is that they were backgrounding people last year the amount that they were quoting to candidates, which was like $8 a core flute or something, they said that on the record last year as well. So this tape kind of implied, well, they said the tape implied that it was an idea that never got actually put through. But I think there could be the potential that they have done it. And, you know, I don't want to be sued, so I don't want to say it definitely did happen. But, you know, I think that definitely deserves further investigation. And
has been a suggestion from candidates in Western Australia that that's precisely what happened.
Who knows? They're such a wonderful presence in Australian politics. I'll miss them when the voters give them their just desserts at the next election. All right, we're almost out of time on the podcast. What next? It's been such a weird ride for years now, and I feel lost in terms of where we're heading in all this. I mean, look, people are trying to make all kinds of sensible suggestions about having the Indigenous recognition, the treaty plan, all this sort of stuff's coming up and getting lost in the hubbub of just day-to-day weirdness that's going on. We don't know when the election's going to be. But I just feel that the whole map has been lost somehow. I sort of suggested this at our last event at Giant Dwarf, and Christina Keneally basically said, no, chaos is pretty much normal in politics. But I'm still not sure that I agree with that proposition, even if, yeah, okay, in the 1930s we went through prime ministers very rapidly. Andrew, what's your feel of the mood of the nation, listening as you do with your ear to the ground in deepest, darkest Stanmore?
I feel like everybody's kind of tuned out at this point. I mean, this is one of the things that is it's slightly frustrating, because I think that there's some really interesting conversations going on. I mean, one thing which I think Sean Kelly suggested in the Monthly was that what happens with Adani is really acting sort of as a referendum on whether major parties stand on taking climate change seriously. And it feels to me like they're kind of waiting this out in the hopes that it falls over, which it, for a number of Indian fraud-based governmental reasons, it could yet happen, in the hopes that sort of the problem takes care of itself and everybody can kind of go like, oh, yes, we like the environment and we like regional jobs and, oh, what a shame this has fallen over, but wasn't it's nothing to do with me.
Wasn't that video of Malcolm Turnbull getting asked about it by a little kid at Bondi Public School and they're having to draw a diagram about the complicated nature of the water flow in the region? That was priceless. I want
hydrology.
I couldn't believe he's got grandchildren himself. I honestly can't believe that he thought that was a sensible way to speak to children. But anyway, all right. And this stuff, I mean, as always with these things, as the circus continues, things like Adani actually do matter enormously. As the world looks at Donald Trump with great amusement, he is certainly not doing anything to make climate change any less of a problem. What's your read of the mood, Alex?
It's quite funny, because when Tony Abbott won the election in 2013, and after, you know, all the Rudd-Gillard craziness, one of the first things he said was that he wanted politics to not be on the front page anymore.
Yes,
and he wanted less media. Like, he just wanted the media to calm down about rumblings and craziness. And obviously that was not successful, because
we all want
Knights and Dames
that we can't achieve.
Exactly. Yeah. He went on to announce Knights and Dames likely to the next day, and everyone was like, oh,
he was
okay.
Right, though.
So we're going to do that kind of thing. Well,
we all want that, don't we?
I think we do all want that. We want there to be less ridiculousness, but we don't want there, and less chaos, but we don't want there to be less scrutiny of what the government are doing.
Oh, of course.
But I think
that
generally there's a few big debates happening at the moment about some of the policies announced in the budget, and obviously, you know, Anthony Albanese, I don't think necessarily has a plan for ascending the Labor leadership, but he is standing on the sidelines chucking a few bombs in the air and seeing where they land. But I think that I would say that everyone is – we're going into we've only got a few weeks of Parliament, and then there's a really long break over the end of June, all of July and the start of August. So
yeah,
there'll be quite a big chunk where there won't be sitting weeks, and so less kind of day-to-day politicking. And I think that maybe people want a bit of a break and want the government just to govern. You know, a very famous British Prime Minister said, you know, the job of a government is literally just to govern day to day, and not, you know, sometimes the kind of big planning is just kind of done on the wayside, and you've just got to literally kind of keep the cogs turning every day. And I think that, you know, maybe if the Turnbull government kind of just stood back and did that for a bit, it wouldn't be a bad thing. But you know, there's a lot of
What are the odds?
I would say the odds are slim to none. I'm going away for all of July, so I really hope nothing happens then.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna text a few politicians and say, hey guys, just to let you know, please don't
just
do
chill.
Anything.
Mark's
in July.
Out. Mark, you know, there's talks of Mark leaving. You'll be overseas. There you go. Look, yeah. I might.
If anyone needs a job, just hit me up. We've got one going.
Yeah, there you go. So look, if we can just return to where this conversation started, at Real Donald Trump is not updated. The last tweet is still, despite the constant negative press Covfefe. And I think the Covfefe is going to continue for a while in Australian politics. I can't see the Covfefe stopping anytime soon.
And no one ever talks about the positive Covfefe either. That's one of the things.
That's true.
You know, I think we need to start moving towards a positive press Covfefe.
Well, Alice, your Covfefe has been wonderful.
I'm particularly interested in Donald Trump's son's tweets and Instagrams about CrossFit. Wants a bit of
which one?
Google time, I'd recommend that. Junior.
John Junior. What an honor to bear that name into the next generation. Donald Trump Junior.
He will be Trump within 10 years, I guarantee it.
Goodness me. Yeah, who knows? There's got to be a book somewhere on how long Trump lasts. That is if he is still with us at the time of recording. I don't want to trivialise the potential mid-tweet death of a US president, but the way this presidency has been going, who knows what to believe?
There's a great
channel. It feels like it would be the most appropriate way to go, too.
There's a great – the guy's in the BuzzFeed US office, actually an Australian guy, Dave Mack, who works in the US.
I know Dave Mack, yeah.
They produced this great book that was called Trump and Big Truck, which is just these pictures of Donald Trump in this sitting in this this big truck making like the Hong Kong signal and like sitting up behind the wheel and pretending to drive. And it was just like, yeah, Donald Trump loves truck. Loves it. He loves the truck.
Yes. Look, in some respects – I actually think they should perhaps just strike a deal with him where all he needs to do as president is big trucks and rallies and leave the governing to people who know what they're doing. Certainly not Jared.
Rallies.
Malcolm
rally.
Malcolm love rowing.
Yeah.
Malcolm rows every day.
Does he row every day?
Row, Malcolm, row.
I guess when you're right on the water. All right, look, it's been a delight. Alice, we love having you on. Even though you have your own podcast these days, go and check out Is It On?
We're interviewing Darren Hinch.
Oh, yes. He's had an interesting win this week, hasn't he?
If you want a bit of forward sizzle, I've got a very interesting interview coming up with a politician who, before he went into politics, worked in a film financing company, and that company turned down the opportunity to finance the film Lord of the Rings. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Put this person in charge of the federal budget. They're obviously brilliant. All right.
No, he was in favour of it. It was his boss.
Okay.
No.
Aww. Frodo had to overcome many skeptics to get to Mordor, didn't he? Andrew, I'll catch you on stage, Giant Dwarf, on Tuesday night. Tickets still available. Your $5 off code again, Covfefe. Farewell, Snowflake. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ha ha.